Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, we have bad, and we have crazy martinis for conservatives today. We also want to let you know that we're sponsored today by ZipRecruiter, and that right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More about that great offer a little bit later in the podcast. And Jim, let's, as always, start with the good martini when we have one. Yesterday, we actually had three. Today's good martini kind of began yesterday with a little bit of confusion. The media found out that Donald Trump left the White House on Marine One when it wasn't on his schedule. And, of course, they went apoplectic talking about protocol and all sorts of other things and wildly speculating about where he might be going. Turns out Donald Trump was headed to Dover Air Force Base because that's where the bodies of fallen U.S. servicemen come back for a dignified transfer. He went up there with Ivanka. There were no cameras. Trump went up there as quietly as he possibly could have to meet with the family of the fallen Navy SEAL who was killed in the raid in Yemen over the weekend. Trump, I think, did the right thing here. He did it quietly. He did it in a, as far as we can tell, professional way. And not a lot of fanfare, and you got to be impressed with that.
Yeah, this is exactly the way to do it. I certainly understand people might want photos or videos or something like that, but considering the solemnity of the moment, considering the dignity that you want to preserve in that moment, and I think perhaps for the family, maybe you could say the privacy of that moment. This is one of those moments that doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, live covered or anything. And I gave Trump a lot of grief, and I'd say deserved grief, about not having the right tone and not speaking with the right amount of reverence when he was speaking before the memorial wall at CIA headquarters. Well, today, or yesterday, I should say, Trump handled it right. So kudos, Mr. President. Those of us who'd wondered if you could demonstrate reverence, demonstrate a respect and a humility before something greater and more important than yourself, a little mark on the chalkboard here. You've done so. Good for you. I think that's an important element of the presidency. Hopefully he doesn't have to do this terribly often, but this almost inevitably turns out to be a duty that all presidents have, and all presidents, you know, tend to not want to have to face, but they have to. And I think Trump handled it about as well as he possibly could yesterday.
We should point out that the fallen SEAL was 36-year-old William Owens. He goes by Ryan. Trump made a very brief mention of the trip when the cameras were in the Oval Office last evening for the swearing in of Rex Tillerson to be Secretary of State. Only a couple of sentences, just talking about in very solemn tones the meeting with the family and how impressed he was with the family and, of course, the sacrifice that Owens made for his country. So it's about as well as you can do that. On to the bad martini now, Jim. And yesterday during the bad martini, we were talking about the flailing tactics of the left in a number of different ways. And I guess we're going to talk about that in the crazy martini today as well. But just when we started to get some momentum on cabinet picks, we saw the Senate Finance Committee, even though the Democrats boycotted, move forward by pushing the nominations of Tom Price and Steve Mnuchin to the full Senate. We saw the Senate Judiciary Committee, where the Democrats actually did show up, push the nomination of Jeff Sessions to the Senate floor. And this morning, the EPA nomination of Scott Pruitt was also sent to the floor, although the Democrats didn't show up for that either. The bad news for Republicans is that two of them decided that they are not going to vote for Betsy DeVos to be Education Secretary, and that includes Maine Senator Susan Collins.
Madam President, I come to the floor to announce a very difficult decision that I have made, and that is to vote against the confirmation of Betsy DeVos to be our nation's next Secretary of Education.
Lisa Murkowski of Alaska is the other one. That means, assuming the Republicans, the rest of them, stick together, Mike Pence would have to break the tie. If there's any other Republican defections, the DeVos nomination could go down to defeat. Jim, there's always a few, like some people like to say, rhinos, moderates in the Senate who kind of gum up the works. Collins did the same thing with the Obama stimulus 8 years ago. You just want to pull your hair out sometimes. They say that Betsy DeVos hasn't proven that she's committed to public education, but she is definitely committed over decades of service to making sure kids get a good education.
Yeah, look, I'm deeply frustrated by this. I am one of those guys who's been arguing for a long time the Republican Party needs to be a big tent party, and that you've got to give lawmakers a certain amount of flexibility to represent the political mood and tides and attitudes of their home state. I don't expect a Republican senator from Maine to vote the same way as a Republican senator from Oklahoma. That having been said, if you want to know why people don't trust moderate Republicans and why they get called squishes and why people fume about rhinos, it's things like this. I mean, I'm just going to observe that, as far as I know, Collins voted for Tillerson, right?
Correct.
Any indication she's going to vote against Ben Carson?
I don't think so.
Right? I mean, no, obviously, this is not an argument against Ben Carson, but people had noted, look, Ben Carson would be the first guy to tell you he's not a housing policy expert. So far as I know, no Republicans voting against that one. Betsy DeVos, like, you know, as far as school choice or advocates are concerned, she never mind is she qualified for the pick. She's the best Trump cabinet pick, right? I mean, people, you know, she was the Gorsuch equivalent for education policy. You saw conservative policy wonks going, yes, and thrilled about her. And now she's hanging by a thread. Now, does this mean she's, you know, not going to get confirmed? No, I think we got it. If I'm a really devious Senate Democrat, Greg, I would say, yes, I'm throwing my weight behind Sessions. Confirm him so that he has to quit his as senator, wait for Alabama to appoint a replacement, and then the vote would be 50 against 49. So they'd have to delay the floor vote on DeVos, assuming, of course, that no other Republicans stray on this one, that they no other Democrats vote no. I think, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but this is one of those moments where they really come across as being shamelessly in thrall to the National Education Association and the teachers unions. And you know, a lot of times I've tried to stand up for Collins and a bunch of these other, you know, back when Olympia Snow was there, the Nice Lady Caucus from Maine, because they are nice ladies and they only want to vote for nice lady legislation. They don't want to, you know, get too close to things that are really hard-edged and controversial and going to cause a lot of anger and protests in their home states. I get that. But this was a good time to stand up for school choice, and they chose not to. And it's deeply disturbing. Hopefully DeVos gets confirmed and we get to continue with this. But, I mean, if DeVos was the one cabinet nomination that went down, I'd be pretty appalled, Greg. Let's also throw it out that at this point that one of the reasons it's in trouble is not a single Democrat's going to go for it. So Joe Manchin, all right, don't expect any sympathy come 2018, all right? All these red state Democrats, you could all go down as far as I'm concerned if DeVos goes down, okay?
Yeah, and they might. These votes will definitely be talked about, and certainly if they filibuster the Gorsuch nomination, that'll be fodder for TV ads as well. It looks, though, like the rest of the Republicans should stay in line. There had been some talk about Pat Toomey for some reason, but he's announced that he's definitely on board. Same with Rob Portman. The only question mark now might be the other senator from Alaska, Dan Sullivan, but I've seen nothing from him suggesting that he's about to vote no on this. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, with the frustration that you've expressed and many other conservatives have expressed here, that it's time to primary these two, which I can understand the sentiment. The problem is Susan Collins is up in 2020, and Lisa Murkowski just got reelected, so she's not up till 2022.
That's what makes Murkowski really unforgivable. And I was going to make the observation that if Pat Toomey had been on the fence, Pat Toomey is one of my favorite senators of all time, longtime friend of National Review. I think exceptionally highly of him. And he's another one of those guys who a lot of my friends were very upset about the Toomey Manchin gun control proposal. They were tearing their hair out about it. And they were up in arms, and no pun intended. My attitude was like, look, he's from Pennsylvania. He's got to win over those Philadelphia suburbs. He's got to, you know, every once in a while, he's going to have to deviate from the party line. You got to cut him that slack. I don't think I think he'll stick with DeVos. But let me just observe that if he does, Senator Toomey, you just got reelected. Right? The next time you face the voters is 2022. You know, there's an excellent chance that Betsy DeVos will not be the education secretary in 2022. Whatever is going to cause you to be elected or reelected 6 years from now, we probably haven't even, you know, come across that issue. Could be, you know, the Russian invasion. our invasion of Russia. You know, you never know what's going to, you know, we have no idea what the political environment was. And I'm in today's Morning Jolt, I mentioned a Facebook friend who wrote, Betsy DeVos destroyed all the public schools in Detroit. Really? They're all destroyed. There are no more schools in Detroit, I find. I had another Facebook friend who, another nice young woman, left of center, and she was furious with Pat Toomey. Wanted to know, what is Pat Toomey willing to do to keep Stephen Bannon out of the White House? Well, there's no confirmation vote for that. Like, I trust me, call me crazy. I have a feeling Pat Toomey and Stephen Bannon, put them in a room together, stuck on an elevator, could be a lot of awkward silences. I don't think these two guys see eye to eye. But having said, there's nothing Pat Toomey can do. It's not like, you know, what's he supposed to do? Run into the White House, jump the fence, and try to throw Steve Bannon out of there? It's this ridiculous expectation. But then I didn't want to argue with this friend. But my other observation was, you know, dear friend, Pat Toomey doesn't face you and the voters till 2022. Okay, even if this is the worst possible thing, there's gonna be no consequence for this for 2022. You know what, Greg? There's an excellent chance that Steve Bannon won't be in the White House in the year 2022. He may go off and do other things. So, if you're a senator, this is when you have the maximum freedom to do what you think is right. And the case of DeVos, I have a very hard time believing Toomey doesn't think that a strong school choice advocate like DeVos wouldn't be the right choice. And it's really disappointing Murkowski would fold like this when she has the political freedom to follow her conscience, so to speak.
Yeah, it's just amazing how people forget the buildup to the school choice movement. Hey, public schools, we'd love to help you change things and give a better education to kids. No, we're doing everything right. Oh, how about testing and evaluating teachers and getting rid of the bad ones? No, we can't do that. Okay, we're going to set up our own school. You hate public education. Unbelievable. But like we said, Collins and Murkowski are not up for a while, so if you're thinking about challenging them, you're going to have to get another job in the meantime. But there are folks hiring. And so the question is, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can.
With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's right, it's free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Hopefully President Trump won't need ZipRecruiter to find another choice for education secretary. But if he does, unfortunately, ZipRecruiter would be a great tool. Okay, on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, just when we had put the kids to bed last night, we thought everything was quiet, potentially until the morning. Well, you turn on cable news just to make sure something else hasn't happened, and oh yeah, it has. This from NBC News, a scheduled speech by controversial Breitbart editor Milo Yiannopoulos at the University of California, Berkeley, led to violent protests that caused the event to be called off. The university said fires were set, including one caused by a firebomb that ignited a generator-powered spotlight, and commercial-grade fireworks were thrown at police. NBC Bay Area showed a group of people grab a metal barricade and smash it against a door. The quote from the university, "The violence was instigated by a group of about 150 masked agitators who came onto campus and interrupted an otherwise nonviolent protest." So, Jim, of course, I guess this can be classified now as mostly peaceful. So in the same week that we've defended Tom Brady, now we have to defend Milo Yiannopoulos, because we like this thing called free speech in this country, even though if we don't necessarily agree with everything people say. But once again, the quote-unquote tolerant left has decided that because they don't agree with you, you must be stopped violently if necessary.
Yeah. By the way, I should point out, I wrote about this in the lead section of the Morning Jolt and was posted in the corner, and one reader said, "Ah, Jim, I like you, but that was a really cheap shot. You didn't even mention Milo." I'd like to say, yes, I was that clever and express that kind of subtle disapproval of Milo. Actually, no, I was just so mad about the protesters and so furious about that and so irate about the excuse-making that I saw, I totally forgot to mention what the whole protest was about, which is my bad. My bad, not Milo. So, yeah, first of all, Milo, whatever Milo's saying, he's got every right. If a student group invites him to speak there, he's got every right to speak there. Now, you want to stand outside and protest? You go ahead and do that. You want to boo in a way that is not disruptive to the event? You go ahead and do that. I saw one, you know, there was a smarter than usual liberal out there who said, you know what would really, really, you know, stop Milo? An empty hall. Right? Like that would be embarrassing to him. That would be something that would actually stop. But instead, man, you know, I mean, you mentioned all the things we saw in the NBC News video. Local ABC affiliate had this woman is there. She goes there wearing a red hat that says "Make Bitcoin Great Again." Now, Greg, I'm not going to pretend to be a Bitcoin expert. I didn't know it had flaws. I didn't, you know, but she clearly is going there, and I guess she's a really big Bitcoin advocate. But people look at the hat and they think she's a Trump supporter. So she's being interviewed on television, and this guy just comes up and pepper sprays her in the face. And this is not what America is about, right? This is, you know, we've seen the term un-American thrown around. But, oh, the Trump executive orders are no. Pepper spraying someone because you don't like their hat is vehemently, completely underline it in red, un-American, right? And I'd like, you know, I would like a big, broad, bipartisan, bi-ideological argument to say this is not what America is about. You do not have the right to assault people because you disagree with them. I know it will not surprise you, Greg, that the mayor of Berkeley said that Milo was silencing others with his speech. I don't get how you do that, but you know. And then once his city was in flames, the mayor of Berkeley went out and said, violence is not the answer. And apparently he was so upset and he was so eager to denounce these leftist protesters, Greg, that he couldn't even put a period on the sentence. Sean Spicer would have corrected that. He said, violence is not the answer, period. Maybe even exclamation point. Let me just observe something that you want. I mean, the trite but accurate argument is, first of all of these protests will be featuring in the Trump 2020 ads.
Yes.
This is do it. You know, by the way, this probably sold another, you know, 200,000 books for Milo. Someone accurately put it that trying to fight Milo with protests is kind of like trying to fight a fire with gasoline. Okay. I am glad Milo is safe, but you know he was gleefully rubbing his hands the entire time saying, bah, ha, 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 this is going to sell so many books, right? Because now Milo is the biggest story in the country, right? Because, you know, that Berkeley went up in flames. Deeply frustrating and infuriating. Given a choice between the extraordinarily flawed and even occasionally outrageous form of order under the Trump administration, or the violent, thuggish anarchy promoted by the anti-Trump left that we've seen here, guess what Americans are going to pick, people, right? You know, given that choice, they're going to stick with Trump. And if you want to fight Trump, you got to get a lot smarter than you are right now. You got to become a lot more orderly. And you also have to demonstrate respect for others. So people are not going to empower the crazy guys in the black masks who are pepper spraying people. This shouldn't have to be said. And let's observe, before the left, you say, oh, it was just a couple of misguided kids, it was a small minority, et cetera, et cetera. Look, this is a common theme that goes all the way back to the WTO protests of the 1999, okay? We saw this at Occupy Wall Street. We've seen this at protests by Black Lives Matter. Greg, we just saw it at inauguration, which was like, what, you know, 12 or 13 days ago?
Right.
I mean, you know, there were people who were setting the limousine on fire and you know, torching the torching that stuff and assaulting people. You know, this is, you know, if you're doing that, you're not the anti-fascist. You're the fascist. And so I'm almost beside myself with befuddlement that the left cannot grasp this. I mean, Milo's book is probably going to spend another week on the bestseller list whenever it comes out. Well, I think it was already like a number one on Amazon like a year before it came out. And I say that, you know, in exasperation and more than a little bit envy, Greg.
Two quick tweets, one from Occupy Oakland. We won this night. We will control the streets. We will liberate the land. We will fight fascists. As you explained, they're the fascists. We will dismantle the state. This is war.
Wait. They want to dismantle the state? Greg, maybe we've just judged these people. All right, let's start with the budget cuts. You guys are cool with that, right? Right? We're all in with this?
Speaking of budget cuts, Donald Trump. If UC Berkeley does not allow free speech and practices violence on innocent people with a different point of view, no federal funds, all caps, question mark. I don't know. Is that the response they want? Do they want to engage with Trump from here on out? I don't know.
The one thing I read this morning indicated that, you know, separating out federal funding for one school out of the overall Department of Education funding to the state is going to be really complicated. Having said that, look, if what happens if Berkeley, the perception is the campus in Berkeley, one, does not respect free speech. We are seeing people up in arms over campuses that are deviating from the Obama administration guidelines on sexual assault. How about handling violent assault in the street? Right? I mean, you know, what happens when a college campus says basically, yeah, we're only going to do lip service to enforcing the law. We cannot actually guarantee a safe environment, not just for students or faculty, but also for anybody who happens to be passing by on the streets in our campuses. Certainly, we can't provide any sufficient security for a safe environment for guest speakers. At some point, some sort of dramatic cut, even if it was a symbolic cut, something to say to Berkeley, you don't get to have this until you start behaving and kind of demonstrating that you have respect for all rights of all Americans, even the ones who disagree with this angry movement that dominates your campus. Could be time for a really hard lesson for that. I'm all for it. I just hope the president can stop talking about the apprentice ratings at the National Prayer Breakfast long enough to focus upon this and do something about it.
He did ask people to pray for the ratings. That's true. Jim, back when Berkeley was doing major riots back in the 60s, Governor Reagan had some of his best sound bites of his entire 8 years in Sacramento.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
Sadly, I'm guessing the current governor will have nothing close to that.
Probably have an acid flashback when he hung out with Jim Jones. Not that I have, you know, an axe to grind with Jerry Brown. But yes, by the way, I'm not making that up. Jim Jones, famous of Jonestown and Kool-Aid fame, was very plugged in with the Democratic establishment back in the late 70s. And one of the guys he hung around with was Jerry Brown.
Not surprising.
Your happy little factoid to leave you on a Thursday afternoon, folks.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter. Right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And don't forget to join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.